Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. It is Tech Talk time. Welcome in. Good to have your company once again. I'm your host, Dave Williams. Don't forget, of course, Tech Talk. It's our chance each week to gather around and explore the world of technology from a blindness or low vision perspective. We'd love to hear from you. If you've got a question or comment, something you'd like on the show, techtalk at rnib.org.uk. That's T-E-C-H-T-A-L-K at rnib.org.uk. Coming up this time, we'll be taking a bit of a look back at the best of the year 2024 on Tech Talk. What got us excited? What made us a little bit angry? And what was a real breakthrough in accessible technology products this year? We'll be hearing all of that over the next hour or so. Welcome in to our co-hosts, Hubert Pavalkovich and Jackie Brown. Welcome back to both of you. What do you think was the most important technology development for us as a community this year? Hubert, let's come to you first.
That video I've seen quite a while back with real-time AI descriptions. Now, this hasn't been delivered yet in 2024, but the promise of it, I thought, was quite significant and quite a landmark in how AI changes and what it can really deliver in the future. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, it's the year of wearable AI, isn't it? I mean, we were talking about AI lots last year, but this year it's like wearable AI and using it out and about and hands-free and all of that. And, of course, lots of talk about those certain pair of glasses. Jackie Brown, what has been the most important development for you this year?
Well, I'm obviously loving all the AI that's coming out, you know, the AI, Be My AI, what the work that Be My Eyes is doing as a company and making the experience of using AI and the volunteer service. So that, you know, that continues to evolve and that's great. But one of the things for me that has stood out this year is the use of JAWS and the new JAWS 25. I have been, like many, critical in the past of some of the updates. You think, well, what on earth are we paying our SMAs for? There's been next to nothing in certain years gone by. But I have to say, this year, I think that the rollout of the FS Companion, where you can ask it questions, and also the improvements to Picture Smart with JAWS and having this on your computer, on your screen reader, and being able to ask it questions. If you go to a website and you want some information, it's right there in JAWS. I just think that we have lambasted them a bit in the past for, you know, lack of features, but they have to be fair. I know that a lot goes on in the background with Microsoft and because of the Windows updates and, you know, obvious updates to Office. But I do think that this year they have really stood up and made themselves be counted with a lot of the AI functionality that they're including in the screen reader. So for me, as a permanent JAWS user, I'm really pleased to see that.
A mainstream development which has really helped my productivity is Copilot, particularly in Teams, where you can ask it for a summary of a meeting. If you didn't, you know, maybe you've got a clash in your calendar and you just can't get to everything. And, you know, sometimes catching up with some of those meetings that you weren't able to attend, if it was recorded and there's a transcript, you can ask the co-pilot to give you, you know, what were kind of the key points, and you're able to get through that information quite quickly. Obviously, it's not perfect, and obviously there are risks and important considerations there, but those productivity boosts, I think, are so important, particularly for us when it comes to digesting, you know, substantial amounts of information. And of course, you know, we've got tools now that can help with the creation of PowerPoint, doing that much more quickly, where you can take a Word document and turn it into a PowerPoint using AI. So yeah, lots still to do, of course. But yeah, they have been, I think, some of my highlights in 2024. What were yours? We'd love to hear from you. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But for now, Hubert Pavalkovich, Jackie Brown, thanks very much. Stick around. This is the best of Tech Talk. Those of us who like to record the world around us, whether that's for radio, a podcast, or just to keep a bit of family history, were absolutely captivated when Zoom announced that they would be launching their new series of Essential Digital Recorders, the new H Essential series. And, of course, we at Tech Talk caught up with Zoom to find out what was new. Just for listeners who are perhaps not steeped in this, just talk us through, what is the Zoom Essential series?
Well, thank you very much for having me. Very excited to be here talking with you, especially about this Essential series. So Zoom has been making handheld audio recorders for a while now, used by musicians and podcasters and audio for video people, filmmakers of all kinds. And some of the most popular products in that line, the H1N, the H4N Pro, and the H6, the previous versions of these three recorders, were out for a long time and served people very well, but we've replaced all three of them simultaneously with our new Essential series, the H1 Essential, H4 Essential, and H6 Essential. And, various updates, one of the biggest ones being 32-bit float recording, and maybe we'll get into more about that. But the big feature that we're going to be talking about, I think, is the accessibility feature built into these. So all three of these recorders have a voice guidance system for blind and visually impaired creators to be able to navigate through and operate these units. And we're so excited to have that, and I'm excited to be here talking to you about it.
And it's not just the voice. You've got some extra tones in there as well. There are some audio cues, earcons, I guess we would call them, that let you know when the device is switched on, when things have changed, when you push the button, when you got that nice little double beep, for example, at the end of the recording. So you've really taken a thoughtful approach to accessibility with this new Essential range.
Absolutely. And that was, kind of what we were trying to do, is make it from the base level accessible. And that starts with, when you purchase one of the products, you put the batteries in it for the first time, you need to turn it on. The first thing that pops up with a voice call out is if you'd like to turn the accessibility system on. So from step one of opening the product and putting the batteries in, you have that accessibility. And you listed a bunch of, great ways that shows itself. Another one is, the headphone volume control. You have two different tones for up and down, and obviously you also hear the volume go up and down of those beeps. We've tried to pack everything in, starting from step one of using the recorder.
You mentioned blind people briefly there, and I'm a realist. I recognize that we represent quite a niche demographic. Was it just blind people you had in mind when you were developing those features, or was it your hope that sighted producers would also find the voice output helpful?
That is an interesting question. I think our initial thoughts were only for blind users. And what we found through the development process and the engineering teams using these recorders was some of them liked having it on and they didn't want to turn it off. Yeah, I think we've learned that there's more to the story of who might find these accessibility features very useful, and that's exciting to us.
And just give us a sense of the scope of this initiative. We've got three products today that speak out of the box. When you arrived at the decision to do that, how committed is Zoom overall? Are we likely to see some of this accessibility work reaching some other products down the line?
So this journey has been a few years, and it started with us trying to make an iPhone app that was fully accessible, which accompanied one of our products, the R20. And we ended up being very limited in the feature set that we were able to put into the app that would be fully accessible. So And we've also seen users use some of our other apps, which we never, you know, specifically programmed to be accessible. You know, a lot of the function worked out of the box with the iOS screen reader and gestures and such, which was great. But after everything, we realized we've got to put this actually in the hardware, and that's when it can start being really useful to everybody all the time. And so, you know, it was a big hurdle to get them into these three products. It ended up being about 25% of total software development time for these units was that system. And we learned a lot that we didn't know before. And we hope to maybe include in some other products. We have nothing currently in the plans that we could discuss. We certainly can't add it to older products, and that is something to note. There is some additional hardware that's involved in the system. So you won't see it in previous products, but it is possible to see it in some future Zoom product.
So how aware were you of the needs of blind content creators during this process? Did you work with blindness organizations or blind podcasters, for example, to make sure that, you know, what was going to go out the door was going to absolutely meet the need?
We've been lobbied for this for a few years, you know, as I'm sure many other companies have, and we've thought about it, and we decided here to finally implement it. We did know that we were going to need some, you know, advice, and our engineering team did reach out to a couple of blind individuals to help with the initial development of it. No specific organizations or anything like that. And now we've been shipping, the H1's been shipping for a couple weeks in the United States. The other two recorders are now out into the market. And we've put a lot of effort post-launch now that we have these in the hands of several users, specifically blind users, that can provide feedback. And we've been gathering that up, and we've kind of compiled a list of, you know, the things that people might want to change. And things, you know, I'll give you one example. There is no quick way to turn the accessibility system on and off in the current firmware. Obviously, when you first get it, you could turn it on. But if you were to go into the menu and turn it off, it's, you know, some like 13 button clicks to get back to turn it on. So we're planning on adding a shortcut to be able to do that. And that's just one small thing of you know, several others that we've heard from users that would be helpful. Things that aren't completely accessible, such as, you know, the arming buttons. You do get beeps, but it's the same tone, so you don't know if it's armed or not. So post-launch is a continuation for us of trying to see, you know, what are the things we could do to make it even better.
Of course, here on Tech Talk, we do talk about the high tech and the low tech. And you may remember back in January, we spoke to our friends at Myra Showers about how they are making their products more accessible for people who are blind or partially sighted. Here to tell us more is Susanna AD, who is Head of Product Marketing with Myra Showers. Welcome into RNIB Connect Radio. Why did you decide to make an accessible shower?
Yeah, thank you for inviting me to speak and tell you about this shower. So we know that the mixer shower market in particular, that's growing, and consumers sort of are choosing that type of shower for quality, reliability, and thermostatic safety as well. So that's where you know, there's a real benefit there through temperature stability. And this shower really builds on Myra's strengths with the advanced electric shower. So that has been designed with inclusive principles and aspects of that product concept. So it's bringing learnings from that into a mixer shower, which is a different type of product and how it functions to a new audience.
Right. I mean, Suzanne, don't assume that I know what you're talking about here at all, because I go into the shower and I twist a dial and water hits me on the head. I have no idea whether I have a mixer shower or any other kind of shower. So can you just clarify for us what you mean by a mixer shower as opposed to any other type of shower?
Of course. Yeah. So electric showers, they heat water at the point of use. So that is using a cold feed. So that's typically purchased as a kind of a replacement option. It's a really good backup option because it doesn't use stored hot water off the boiler. A mixer shower, however, does. So with that, you get a benefit of increased pressure of the water, a higher flow rate as well. And then most mixer showers on the market are thermostatic. So you get the added benefit of temperature stability as well.
What did you learn about accessibility from working with RNIB?
There were honestly so many different learnings. And, you know, I think the learnings from this project from working with the RNIB will extend far beyond the Select Flex shower. I think, you know, there's sort of clear inputs that we've taken into the design, but there were so many more learnings that will kind of go forward to Myra Shower's future product development as well. For me, one of the biggest learnings that came through in the user research was the difficulty that partially sighted users experience distinguishing chrome plated finishes. So I'm thinking that most mixer showers are chrome plated. You know, chrome plating gives a really durable finish. It's easy to clean and maintain, but that also creates a mirror-like surface. So it's really difficult to see the controls and if there's kind of markings on the product, how to adjust the temperature, how to turn it on and things like that. So with the new Select Flex shower, we've introduced a completely different colour palette. So moving away from chrome plating to a matte finish. So that mirror-like surface is gone. It's much easier to distinguish in the contrast on those as well. And then we've got black and white colourways on the key touch points. So it's really easy to see where to interact with the product, how to change the temperature, how to change the flow as well. We've also introduced some audible controls. So the temperature lever clicks as you sort of move through the temperature. So, you know, it's a really positive feedback that you're selecting something. So I think that was kind of my biggest learning through the project. And again, that's something that will apply to our future product development as well, and far beyond this product too.
Mm, yeah, just giving you a bit of certainty, because I think most of us just sort of twist the knob and hope, you know.
Of course, 2024 and 2025 are big years for Braille, and back in March I was lucky enough to attend the California State University of Northridge Conference on Technology and Disability, where I caught up with Jenny Axler from HIMSS, who told us all about the new Braille Emotion.
We are introducing something called the Braille Emotion this year, and the Braille Emotion is a new Braille display line. This is the first product in that line. It is a 40-cell Braille display with a lot of extra functions. For those of you who are familiar with our Q Braille, this one's a lot sleeker and slimmer. It does not contain the hybrid keyboard, but it does have a lot of function keys in addition to the Braille keyboard. So the setup is a lot easier for those of you who are familiar with Q Braille. This is a much simpler situation. It does actually take Bluetooth audio as well as your Braille display. So if you're sitting in another room, you want to control your PC from your couch, you can get your audio with it, and it'll do the same thing, of course, for iOS, Android, anything that you connect to it. It supports 5 Bluetooth connections and 1 USB. So 6 simultaneous connections. That's the same with the Q Braille. What's different with this device is that it contains a lot more robust standalone programming. So we have a media player, a Daisy player that supports audio. We have a notepad. We have a document reader. This one actually has a voice recorder with stereo microphones, believe it or not. It has 43 gigabytes of internal storage. It also supports USB-A and micro SD storage as well. And the USB port will support storage, as I mentioned, but it also supports QWERTY keyboards. And you can connect USB audio devices. And that just kind of came along for the ride with Android. It wasn't exactly a planned function. It just, like I said, kind of came with Android because this is based on Android 12. So sometimes we can take advantage of peripheral access just because of the operating system.
That's a lot of specs there, a lot of technical information. It's quite a busy market, you know, there's lots of 40 cell braille displays out there. Who do you think this is really aimed at?
I would say that it most closely competes with the Brilliant. It's one of the things that they don't have that we do is the media features, but it's kind of in that space. I think the market that it's aimed at are those people that don't quite want the Braille Sense 6. They would like to do something more than just use a Braille display with mainstream products. That's sort of their main functionality, but they would like to have some internal functions that are more easily accessed with a Braille interface. So it's kind of, you know, those people that don't want to deal with the Play Store, don't want to deal with Android, that generally do email on their phone and PC, you know, and things like that, that are just, and I actually think that there are quite a few people in that middle space. And I think the reaction here at CSUN has kind of proven that to be so. We've had a lot of interest in this device. So I think there is, the Braille market in general is so, it's very robust right now with a lot of different types of products, all the way from your Braille Sense 6, you know, and Braille Note Touch at the top of it to these voice-only options that are coming into play now, and even, you know, down to the Orbit Writer and the Hable 1 and things like that. And then, of course, we've got some voice options. It's and everything in between. So it's really interesting. Even I'm not sure sometimes what's going to take off, because even our product line itself, the QBraille is a little more basic. This has a little more robust feature set. We've got, you know, then the Braille Sense 6 Mini and then the Braille Sense 6. So we try to cover our bases as far as what people want. But this market has really widened out and I think has a lot of variety and choice compared to even a few years ago.
Okay, so why don't you just give us a little bit of a tour then of this new 40 cell Braille, the Braille Emotion, yeah?
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, and it does have TTS.
Excellent. Okay, well, I look forward to hearing that.
Okay, so I'm just going to tell you that it does use Nuance,
yeah.
Vocalizer Voices. Also, for those of you who are familiar with the Sense Player, so let me talk a little bit about what this looks like, because this is almost a hybrid between our Braille Edge, our Braille Sense, and a Sense Player in many ways. The Braille Edge, of course, was our last sort of Braille keyboard-based Braille display, because the QBraille has the hybrid. And we have been asked to sort of upgrade that device, and I would say that we've definitely done that with this. But we've also, of course, all the programming in it, like the notepad and the document reader, etc., are Braille Sense parallels exactly. The Braille Edge and the QBraille have more basic versions of these programs. That's not true in this device. It doesn't have things like the email, the web browser, wiki search, Google search, web radio, podcasts, you know, all of that stuff that are, you know, and of course, no installing of external apps that the Braille Sense has. But the programming that it does contain is exactly parallel to the Braille Sense programming. So if we're looking at it, we do have our Braille keyboard as usual. We do have the space bar below the Braille display. We've had a lot of requests for that. Yes.
That, right. So it was always a distinctive feature of HIMS displays that
you didn't do that.
So now you've put the Braille keys obviously where they've always been, but the space bar is now on the front edge in front of the Braille line nearer to you, so your thumb sits on there quite nicely, and that means that the overall footprint from front to back is, I mean, I don't know what you say about 5 inches, 4 inches?
Oh, from front to back? Oh, no, I think it's more like 3.
Okay.
It's pretty slim. The QBraille is about 5.
Yeah.
So if you compare it, this is much, much slimmer. I guess there's a little protrusion that probably gives it another half inch in front, so that's more like 3.5.
Okay.
So we've got the Braille keys, and then underneath we have space, and on either side of the space bar we have Control and Alt. So then we have this little protrusion in the front. For those that are familiar with the Focus, the body shape is sort of similar to that, and the protrusion is sort of similar to that, except the functionality is much different here. So we have our home key on the center of that protrusion and our stereo microphones on either side of that home key. Then we have the sloped front edge, and we have our F1, F2, F3, F4 that we've always had, and then we have a couple of additional keys on the edges that they're basically additional modifiers. We call them cursor keys. On the very right of the sloped front edge, we have the micro SD card slot. So if we go back to the top face to the left of the Braille keys, we have three keys that have Braille labels, W, B, and C. For those that are familiar with the Sense Player, these are going to be familiar to you. What the W is Wi-Fi. The Sense Players aren't labeled, but they have the same functions. W is Wi-Fi, B is Bluetooth, and C is connectivity. So you press them quickly to toggle these on or off, and you press and hold them to bring up the associated menus or setup managers for those things. And on the right, then, the power key is actually on the top face of the device to the right of the dot 8, which is kind of an interesting place to put it. So there is that.
Do you know, when I saw WBC, I thought, there's the World Braille Council. I wondered where that had got to.
Well, we'll pretend that this product was created exactly for, you know, that purpose.
There you go.
So on the left edge, then, we have a USB-A port, which, as I mentioned, supports drives, keyboards, and USB audio devices. And above that, there is a record button. You can press and hold it to automatically start a recording or press it quickly to open the voice recorder application. On the right side, again, similar to the Sense Player, we have our volume and voice control buttons, and they work exactly the same way. You use the voice control button to toggle what it's going to do, speed, pitch, equalizer, volume, whatever it might be. And then you use the volume buttons to adjust that. We also do support the Braille Sense shortcuts for those who are familiar with those. I tend to automatically do them, even though they're more difficult, just because I'm so used to it. So we do support adjusting these things with those shortcuts as well. Behind that, then, we have the headphone jack. There is one. And we have a USB-C port, which is used for the Braille terminal and also storage mode. And then I guess I did forget to mention, on the top face, on the very left and very right corners, top corners, are stereo speakers.
Wow, there's so much to take in here. Is it going to work with all the screen readers out the gate?
Yes. And for those who have been using our products for a really long time, yes, we are finally updating the JAWS driver and the JAWS key map, so it's going to be much more comfortable to use. We will be supporting the Braille In features and the math features and all of that. And a lot of that hopefully will apply to our other products as well, but for sure, Emotion out of the gate. We are supporting USB HID Braille, and we have worked with NVDA to make sure that that is working. So that is also working well and perfectly, and we've already seen a snapshot with that implemented. Of course, it's going to then work as a USB Braille display, plug-and-play Braille display with Android and iOS as well, and of course Mac. And so yes, it will work with everything out of the gate. We do have, of course, JAWS now needs the legacy USB still, so we do support both. We have the legacy USB, the HID Braille USB, and then the 5 Bluetooth connections.
Of course, any questions about any of the products from HIMSS in the UK, contact Sight and Sound for pricing information and more details. And thank you so much, Jenny, for sharing the Braille Emotion with us. Always good to speak with you right here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Now, many of us at this time of year will, of course, be hunting for a bargain in the Boxing Day sales and all of that. Jackie Brown, Hubert Pavalkovich, what's been your purchase of 2024, do you think?
I think for me, the honourable mention goes to probably my Zoom H4 Essential talking recorder with talking features, which has made things a little bit easier when recording on location. But for me, the revolutionary purchase, I've mentioned it a few times, it's my Mantis Q40 Braille display, my reintroduction to Braille after not using it for quite a long time. That's probably revolutionised things for me, and it might have made my bank account cry, but it has certainly been worth it.
And those Zoom recorders, that's so important as well, isn't it? The accessibility features that have appeared there to make those devices accessible. Are you using that a lot, Hubert, your Zoom recorder?
Absolutely. I use it from anything to recording demonstrations of products to going out and recording interviews on location. You know, I don't kind of have to go, oh, is it recording? Oh, is it on? Is it this? Is it that? I can just adjust all the settings, change all the volumes. It's always that nice little step to make something work better and be able to do one or two more things independently that previously I had to ask someone else to do. It is really good.
It's been a bit of a mixed bag, hasn't it, Jackie, in terms of mainstream accessibility this year? Of course, great developments from Zoom there and Sony, who we've spoken to on a number of occasions, making their products more accessible. But then, of course, we had that big regression with the update to the Sonos app, which was problematic for many of us. How do you think it's going in terms of mainstream companies really getting it when it comes to accessibility?
I think it varies. I think some companies are really, they get on board, like Zoom has with the recorders, as Hubert says. They're fantastic, that the accessibility that they've now put in them, and they're really on board. Samuel Green, you know, is willing to be interviewed, and he talks about, you know, the ways in which he tries to make the, you know, that those devices accessible. And I think that's great. But then, you know, we had a regression with Sonos earlier in the year. To be honest, at this time, I still haven't updated to the new app. I think it's disappointing. I think even for people who can see to use the app, I think a lot of people didn't like it. It just didn't go down well. I don't think Sonos really addressed the whole issue. I don't think they appreciated just the commitment that people have made with their smart speakers. So there's still a way, I think, to go in some areas, but in other areas, you know, people are making an effort. So we'll just have to hope and keep plugging away. I think we can never rest on our laurels, if you like, about mainstream technology. We've always got to keep pushing and letting people know that this is not acceptable and that we need accessibility built into products. It's a slow progress and it can be very frustrating, but I think we've just got to keep going.
Yeah, it's the right thing to do and it's good for business. And I can assure you, Jackie, honestly, the Sonos app is a lot better than it was. I think it's okay now. I mean, it's a different design. You know, the modern app design doesn't have tab bars. That's just the way apps are going generally, I think. But, yep. You know, it works. You can use it. It won't be a disaster if you upgrade. It will take a bit of getting used to, though. But on purchases, what's been your purchase of 2024?
I did buy a pair of Sonos headphones, and I really like them. The Sonos Ace headphones, they're very nice. I'm not completely convinced that they're just as good as the Sony WH-1000XM5s, which Santa Claus has delivered to this house recently. I really love headphones. I love a good pair of headphones. So I was very pleased with the purchase of the headphones this year.
So in spite of the, you know, the ball being yep. dropped quite significantly with the app, you yep. were still happy to hand over some yep. cash for headphones. Goodness.
I did. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard the Arc Ultra recently as well, and I'm not really a soundbar person, but it really did blow me away. So,
what's been your purchase, Dave?
Ah, yes, that's a good point. I finally got round to upgrading my trusty Apple Watch, and I got the Apple Watch Ultra 2. I know it's last year's technology, but I wanted that battery life. I wanted that improved GPS for tracking my runs. And I love now that I can go away for the weekend and I don't have to worry about charging the watch. The battery just keeps on going. And I've reconciled myself to the fact that it is a chunkier piece of kit. Yes, it's expensive. I hope it lasts as long as my Series 4, which went on for about 5 or 6 years. And I'm quite happy with that. And I think that's probably it from me. Callum's not with us today, but I asked him earlier what his purchase was of 2024.
Favourite tech purchase? That's a tough one. I think this isn't really a purchase, but I've started subscribing to Voice Vista, which is the navigation app that came from the Soundscape code. So the way this works is that the app is free and all the features are free, but there's an optional subscription which doesn't really give you anything new, but it's just a way of supporting the developer. And Voice Vista has taken Soundscape and just, there's too much that's been added to it to kind of go into here, but he's added, you know, this developed by one person as far as I know, and he's added things like turn-by-turn directions, he's added a lot more features to get more info of your surroundings and to be able to customize it more. And there's just so much work going on, which he's basically giving away for free with the option to support it. And I just thought, well, this has become such a reliable app that I've come to rely on, certainly. We've had apps like this in the past go away because they're not sustainable anymore. So I thought, yeah, do you know what? I'll put my hand in my pocket and support this.
So this is an app on iOS at this point. So you're using it on your iPhone.
Yeah, not on Android, unfortunately.
Why was it so important for you, Callum, personally, to support this? Because, you know, times are tough, cost of living and all of that, and you don't have to give VoiceVista any money, but obviously you value it so much that you've decided to contribute.
Yeah, because I just think, this app started with Microsoft. Obviously, Soundscape was developed by Microsoft as part of a research project, and I just kind of took it for granted. You know, I relied on it so much when it was under Microsoft's ownership, and you just sort of take it for granted. You're like, that's Microsoft. You know, they've developed that. They can afford to run this. This is going to be around forever. And then, of course, that app went away, which we don't necessarily know that it was down to cost, but I imagine it probably had something to do with it. They did, vaguely talk about sustainability. And then, obviously, this one developer brought it back and made it so much better in a lot of ways. But he's not, this one developer isn't making any money out of this. He's doing it in his spare time for a really small, really niche audience. And I just think that sort of thing, if we want these apps and these utilities to continue, we need to support them where we can. And I mean, the subscription is ridiculous. It's 99 pence a month. And it feels like not enough, because I'm like, does that really help? Does that really support anything? But it doesn't, of course times are tough and this might not apply to everyone, but for me, it's basically £1 a month that hopefully means this app that I use every day, every time I go out, can stick around. So, I mean, I think it's worth it. £24 a year. I mean, you really can't go wrong with that.
£12 a year, by my calculation.
Sorry. Yeah. £12 a year. I can't do maths, but you know what I mean.
Is that amount, is that a fixed amount, Callum, or is that an amount that you choose? Are there different tiers, or is just that the amount that the developer has suggested?
It's a fixed amount. So you can do the monthly payment, or you can do an annual payment. But I think as is common with these subscriptions, the annual payment works out less than the monthly payment. And again, I mean, the monthly payment was so small that I thought I'd just chip in that bit extra.
Well, there you are. So rather than going out and buying a big new shiny piece of tech, you could, of course, just support your small developer who is doing something great for the community. I think that's well worth sharing, Callum. Thank you so much. Let us know what your purchase of the year was of 2024. Was there a piece of technology that really blew your mind, that changed your life? We'd love to hear about that. Or did you get something that was just a complete disaster that you couldn't send back quick enough? Techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But for now, thank you so much to Hubert Pavalkovic, Jackie Brown and Callum Stoneman.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk or tweet @rnibradio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Of course, the summer of 2024 will be remembered for the Olympic and Paralympic Games, but also for many of us in the community, we'll also remember it as the season when we went out and bought ourselves some new fancy schmancy clever smart glasses. The Meta Ray-Bans arrived in June and Jackie and I were quite impressed. So how do they feel to wear? What are they like when you've actually got them on? You're not somebody that uses glasses generally, as I understand it.
That's right, yeah, because I don't have any sight at all, even any useful light perception or anything. I don't have that. So I actually found them. They are literally just a normal pair of glasses. And you take them out of the little glasses case, which charges, by the way. So if you pop them in the case and your case is charged up, there's a little USB-C port at the bottom of the case, and you charge them up. And then the battery life in the Meta glasses is really quite good. They say 4 hours, but I know people that have had about 8 hours out of them, which is really pretty good. Now, one of the things that I found about the glasses that I really liked was, because you paired them with your phone in Bluetooth, it means that you get voiceover on your phone. It means you can hear your phone speaking to you. So what you do is, when you wear the glasses, as soon as you unfold the arms, you hear a little tune, and it knows then that they're active, and you pop them on, and they are very comfortable to wear. And then you can ask Siri on your phone, which might be in your pocket or, you know, in a bag somewhere. You can just ask Siri to open Voice Vista, for example, which is a fantastic app. And you can go around getting the Voice Vista in your Meta glasses in each speaker. If there's anything on your right hand side that Voice Vista announces, you'll get it from the right speaker. If there's anything on the left, it'll announce it in the left speaker. And if it's straight ahead, you'll get it in the middle, just above your nose. But it's really good. The app, the Voice Vista app on its own is fantastic. But if you wear it with the Meta glasses, you really do get the benefit of all the separation, all the sounds. It's a bit like wearing bone conduction headphones if you're going out with Voice Vista, because if you're using bone conduction headphones, you've got your ears free. It's the same on the Meta Ray-Ban glasses. You're wearing the glasses instead of, say, a Bluetooth headset or bone conduction headphones, and that's the way it works. And it is absolutely brilliant. I was blown away by that alone, to be honest. And I think that if you're not even interested in the AI setup, certainly using the Meta glasses just for, you know, a navigation app like Blind Square, Lazarillo, Voice Vista on iPhone. If you're interested in GPS altogether, then it's a great way of having your hands free to hold your dog or your cane and walk around outside, and you look normal because you've got just a pair of ordinary sunglasses on.
Right, and you haven't got the risk of, you know, if you sneeze, you lose your earpods or that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're obviously not just going to get them for that, right? Because there are bone conduction headphones available at a lower price. The reason you would perhaps go for the Meta frames is the camera. So tell me about some of the applications for that. What have you used the camera for, and how well has that worked?
Okay, so you can use the camera for taking pictures, and you can do little videos as well, and you can send those to WhatsApp, because Meta is all part of the sort of the family of WhatsApp, Facebook and Instagram. I'm not a social media person. The only thing I would use them for in that sense probably would be for WhatsApp, because I do use it to converse with my family and send pictures. And it's nice because you can walk around and take pictures. I had a friend who gave me an example of moving into their new home, and he wanted his family to see what his house was like. So he went around taking pictures using the Ray-Bans and then sent the pictures up to WhatsApp, which is, you know, it's a really useful thing to do. And of course, some people buy them for that reason. And I think that's why really Meta have kind of, they're Ray-Ban glasses, but they've got the added bonus for sighted people, I suppose, of using your social media. But it does work for us because, of course, we've got voiceover or talkback on our phones as well. So that is another incentive. Also, you can listen to music on them. Now, I'm not saying that you would want to do this really all the time if you were on a bus. I know I wouldn't really want to use my glasses for listening to music, because there might be a bit of bleed coming out and other people might hear it. And also, I just prefer my headphones, a bit of a decent sound. But they are actually, they do have quite good speakers in them, the Ray-Ban. So in fairness, if you wanted to listen to a piece of music, you can link your Amazon your Apple Music or your Spotify accounts, and you can get them. You can ask the glasses to play songs for you or your playlist.
I've been reading that in order that other people in your environment know that you're recording a video or taking pictures, there's a light, I understand, on the front of the glasses, so that makes other people aware.
Yes, it does. I obviously can't see the light, but there is, I'm told that there is a light on the glasses at the front. And, you know, if you are recording, as you say, live, it does acknowledge to anybody else who's around you that there is, you know, they are being recorded or something is being recorded. So I guess that's all part of the privacy and the terms and conditions that you accept when you sign up with the glasses. I would say as well, Dave, that the voices, there are a couple of voices for the Meta AI portion, and the voices are actually really quite good. I've got one for the UK. You can set your language. Even though I'm pretending to be in America, you can still set your voice language on the glasses to UK. And I've picked a voice that I think it calls itself Precise. And it really is quite a good voice, actually. It's not any of the voices that I've heard before on any of the other wearables or on phones or anything like that. To me, the voice sounds like the veteran reporter Kate Ady. So it's a good voice. It's not bad at all. And there is another one that it's called, I think, Enthusiastic. But I prefer the kind of the Precise voice. So you have that as well. And you've got the voice coming through the speakers on the glasses. I don't really feel it clashes with your voiceover on your phone, because once you are using one, the other one stops, really. So it's quite good.
We all had a little bit of a scare earlier in the year. One of our much-loved resources, Apple Viz, was threatened with closure, but then had a last-minute reprieve. Here's Callum to tell us more.
There was an announcement that Be My Eyes have acquired Apple Viz. I'm joined now by two members of the Be My Eyes team, Brian Bashin, who's the Vice Chair, and Andy Bailey, Chief Marketing Officer. Guys, thanks so much for joining us here on Tech Talk. I want to just kind of throw this out to both of you, I guess. What does Apple Viz mean to you, either personally or from a perspective of Be My Eyes as a company?
Well, this is Brian. Maybe I'll start. You know, I'm a blind guy, and the landscape these days is that most blind people don't learn their tech by going to some organization and taking class after class. We learn it from the community. We learn it from often other blind people. And over the years, maybe the last dozen years, if I've got sort of stymied by some problem in iOS or something in the iPhone in general, Apple Viz is the place that I go. And you know that if it's not an Apple Viz, there's probably not an answer to it. So it is the reference, it is authoritative, and it is ever-changing. And the blind community doesn't have too many things like that in many fields, but it has this treasure here in iOS and on the Apple side of things. Andy might want to take it from a broader perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to add one particular perspective, which I actually just recently this afternoon came off a call with a blind guy who's based over in the US in Chicago, actually. And he was just waxing lyrical about how for years now, he and pretty much every blind person that he knows has been using Apple Viz almost as a day-to-day resource for, you know, anything tech related, but obviously primarily around Apple products. And he said that there really wasn't an equivalent thing really, particularly in the US, actually. So Yeah, and I mean, he was waxing lyrical about our involvement subsequently and was profusely thanking us and so on. It was a bit embarrassing, really, but but you know, that's a typical Brit reaction, you know. Doesn't, yeah, oh, terribly, terribly sorry, terribly sorry. We've certainly seen that huge relief, I think, of a lot of people that thankfully this Applevis resource is going to continue.
Brian, what do you think it was that made Applevis so special? Because I mean, I've been trying to explain this to people, those who aren't as familiar with it, since this news came out about its closure, and it's, you know, I think that sometimes the thought is, well, it's just another forum, you know, it's just another website, but it, as we know, it really isn't. There's something more than that to it.
Yeah, in the blind community, it's ours. It's authentic. It's not somebody else saying what we should do. It is our community saying, hey, I found this workaround, or this is not solvable and we need to get the problem to Apple's attention. It's the authenticity is extraordinary. I mean, as I came to know the wide editorial staff of Applevis, all people with day jobs outside of Applevis, all people who volunteer, most of them on the site every day, 365 for years and years. I mean, it's become a thing. It's kind of a mission for the people who've been involved with it. And I think just because it comes from the heart and, you know, we use this tech every day and we live by it and we die if it doesn't work. So it's important. It's not just a theoretical help for people. It's going to help me this afternoon if I get stuck in some new revision of some bit of software or app or whatever.
So, I guess you've both already answered this in a way, but when you saw the announcement or read the announcement of the closure, why did you feel it was important for Be My Eyes to step in and to help this, you know, to kind of save this project and help it continue?
In short, we felt we had to do something. Actually, Brian, if I remember, it was you that first told the rest of the management team that there was this pending closure of Applevis when, you know, I think it was hot off the press. I think you must have a inside track with somebody there. I don't know. But and I think it was you, Brian, that suggested, you know, if we could do something, it would be a brilliant thing to do to keep it going. And I guess what we initially sought to find out is a little bit more about the inner workings, if you like, of Applevis you know, a little bit more about what drove them in particular, you know, the individuals that started it and the individuals that were primarily responsible for the day-to-day running of it, all as volunteers, by the way. And Brian, I think you'll concur, we very soon found a real alignment of our principles, if you like, and of our belief in our future and all of that sort of stuff. We were a very, very aligned as two organizations, obviously two very different organizations in what we actually do, but in terms of the principles of where we wanted to get to, for example, the growth of the individual communities. We've got a community, Applevis has a community. There are overlaps in that community as well, but we both had a common vision about growing them and where we wanted to grow them, how we approached the user community in particular, and to develop a sense of the community working with each other to assist each other as well. So there was a real meeting of minds, I think, in those first couple of meetings. And Brian, why don't you pick it up from there? Because it sort of evolved, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. I mean, we knew for years, because we've done some surveys, that the overwhelming majority of Be My Eyes users in North America and Europe in particular are on the iOS side of things. We do want to spread this throughout the global South, and mostly that's going to be an Android play. But because this is sort of core to what we do, it was like, how can we help here? And we didn't have a plan. We just had that morning meeting and I said, how can we do this? And we established contact and we began to appreciate what some already knew, which is the labor of love that David Goodwin poured into this site for 14 years of everyday work. What a saintly and selfless act. And every day, 3,000 or 4,000 people go to the site from all over the world to get solutions and practical things. So as Andy was saying, look at our missions and the alignment. We don't believe in a financial barrier between blind people and access. So Be My Eyes is free to the user. Apple Viz has always been free. We're not going to monetize it in any way for blind users. Absolutely not. We're also holding ourselves to the highest standards, but both in, say, the AI that we've been working with for a year and a half, making sure that is responsive and to the community's needs and aspirations. And also here, just making sure that, you know, when September 9th comes and the new bunch of hardware is going to be launched by Apple, there will be an Apple Viz, though, relentlessly going through all the changes and differences. And because Apple Viz doesn't feel corporate or there's a monetary incentive there, it just really aligns with what we do as well. And I think people recognize it.
Of course, many of us get the day started with a good, warm, strong cup of coffee. But some of these machines are increasingly complicated to use. So our very own Hubert Pavalkovich has been investigating the accessibility of coffee machines.
What we're going to show you is the De'Longhi Brilliante ICMJ210.BK 10-cup filter coffee maker. Bit of a long name, but trust me, it is quite a something. Off it goes. As you can hear, the machine is carrying noises. Making the coffee. The coffee's nicely pouring into the jug. Now it has made the beep that's indicates it's finishing. And now, at this point, I know for sure that there's not going to be any coffee coming out. So I'm going to remove the jug out of the base, which is fairly simple. It slides out nicely. Don't touch the base of the machine. It is very hot. You line up the spout of the jug. And the good thing is it's plastic, not metal, so it hasn't heated up. So you line it up with the cup.
Into my travel flask.
All the coffee is poured away, so I'll put the jug in the sink. I tend to fill it up with water and then wash it up when needed. A good, nice, thin brush is possibly helpful because then it'll help you to wash the jug. Then I put the filter paper with the coffee in the bin and put the compartment, because it can be simply removed, into the sink as well to be washed up, so it's nice and easy to clean. And that is all there is to it. A nice, simple-to-use coffee machine.
That's it from Tech Talk in 2024. Thank you so much for all your company throughout the year. It's so important that we come together as a community, share our experiences about what works, what doesn't work, what's frustrating, and our hacks and tips and tricks to get the best from our accessible technology. Of course, we'll be back in 2025. We hope you will too. But from us, myself, Dave Williams, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovich, Jackie Brown, and our producer Hal Davies. Until next year, bye for now.
See you in 2025.
See you next year.
Bye-bye.